WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. On Friday the 6th, we will be in Perry Hall, the hall, Perry Hall. We're going to be at Comrades Crabs. I'm giving away some Betty Boop scratch-off tickets here. You can have blue or you can have pink, either way. Also brought to you by our friends at Goodwill and our friends at Window Nation, our newest sponsor. Last time I got together with this guy, we were at the Super Bowl. I'm losing track. It was 53, 4, 2, whatever. All I know is we were in Los Angeles in a convention hall, and everybody was gambling except me and Solomon. We were actually talking about the game. Solomon Wilcots, our defending champion back here, just 1 minute and 6 seconds away from taking a parade back to Cincinnati. Rob Etherington is also here from Clean. He's going to talk about ALS and some other stuff. Sol, you always got a cause, man. But, I mean, on the back end of this football thing, the cause here is the draft. Did you give us an A? I need to know that before we talk about anything.
Are you kidding me? We were all blown away by everything the Baltimore Ravens did in this past draft. You come away with three of the top 50 players on the board, on everybody's board. Kyle Hamilton, Tyler Linderbaum, who everyone absolutely loves. This is another Marshall Yanda on the Baltimore Ravens offensive line. And then when you can get David Ojabo from Michigan, the edge rusher, in the second round, we saw it as a complete steal. And I got to tell you, everybody in Cincinnati is now put on notice. The Baltimore Ravens, their demise has been greatly exaggerated, Nestor. I got to tell you.
Well, a six-game losing streak right now that they're on for 9 months, as everybody with a little RA in the facility out there and always was. Rob Etherington's here. You know, Sally, you always have like a cause, right? And Rob, welcome in. How are you? Good to see you again. And this is near and dear because ALS, football players, injuries, you and I get together every year at the Super Bowl and talk about this. Rob, you're doing something with a product called Clean, right? And give me a little bit of your background here. And I'm working with Solly and bringing sports radio to life to talk about this because if anybody's familiar with ALS, and I think we all are at this point, it is just a tremendously devastating thing to witness. And I'm witnessing it here with OJ Brigance. We had a Brigance Brigade here over the weekend.
So Solly and I are teaming together because ALS is a big problem. It's one of these medical problems. We've been successful in a lot of other diseases, but ALS is not yet there. And we are partnering together, he and I, on NFL and football in particular, because NFL players and football players generally, including at the college levels, have a very higher incidence of ALS. We don't understand why, but it's remarkably compromising. It's a devastating disease. And we want to, band together, Solly and I, to see if we can help bring awareness and more research. And Clean in particular is focused on developing a drug for ALS.
Solly, tell me about your involvement in this, because I don't think there's anybody involved with the league that doesn't know somebody that is struggling from ALS. And obviously the Lou Gehrig part of this and the baseball part of this, it's been on the tip of my tongue from the beginning, from my childhood, literally because of Lou Gehrig.
Yeah, if you're a Baltimore Ravens fan, everyone has heard the story of OJ Brigance, right? And as someone who's battled with ALS for quite some time, if you're a New Orleans Saints fan, you know and heard about Steve Gleason. And then remember, longtime broadcaster, former Atlanta Falcon, Tim Green, who's battled with ALS as well. And so as we're very fortunate to be part of the National Football League, whether as a former player, whether as a broadcaster, to be able to use the NFL platform to shine a brighter light on the need for new innovative treatments for ALS. And that's why we're fortunate to partner with Clean and Rob Etherington to be able to just bring greater attention, greater awareness for the need for new innovative treatments to help battle ALS.
Rob, it's a century ago, Lou Gehrig, right? And I can only imagine the mystery of this disease then, right? And where we are now. I had a long friendship with Curt Schilling back in the day when he was pitching for the Phillies, and he did tons of stuff. And I would spend time during the holidays with folks like you that were involved in trying to find a cure and raising money and galas and seeing people struggling. This is before when OJ was running around tackling players and winning Super Bowls here. This has been going on a long time. Where are the strides? Where has this changed in 30 years?
So let's just go back to you said nearly a century ago. So Lou Gehrig was diagnosed in his 36th year. He was a super young guy, 36 years old. And he was diagnosed in 1939. It took 55 years for there to even be one drug approved. Now we only have two. So literally since nearly, what is that, 90 odd years ago or so, I guess it's 80 plus in any event, there's only two drugs that have been developed. So what is ALS? I think let's unpack it just a bit more if not everyone's familiar. So Lou Gehrig's he gave his name to the disease, but it's really called amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. It's a progressive disease. It affects nerve cells in the brain and in the spinal cord. There is a complete loss eventually of muscle control, and 30,000 people in the U.S. have ALS. Doctors diagnose 5,000 new cases every year. Now, the cause is not fully understood. Yes, there's a genetic component. Yes, there's environmental factors that are believed to play a role. And the two drugs that are approved, everybody's on them, but unfortunately, they are only marginally effective. And I think the emphasis there is on marginally. And let's just go back to the NFL for a second, because I think it's important that the football fans here understand that there was a recent paper published in JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, that NFL players are four times more likely. I mentioned this earlier. And there's a connection maybe to CTE as well.
Connection to head trauma. Can we just say at least that much?
Yeah. Head trauma. Let's connect it to head trauma. And so what happened here is for those football fans, researchers examined over 19,000 NFL players who took the field for at least one game from the 60s to literally a few years back. So over 60 years, it was the largest study of its kind ever. And previous studies have also seen a link to head trauma. So we're clean. We're focused on this. This is what we do every day now is live our nights and days thinking about ALS and how we can bring a drug to market to help.
When you say marginally effective, what does that mean, Rob? I mean, in regard to my sister's battling MS, she has the good MS versus the bad MS. There's no good MS, but in talking to MS people, she's regulated, tired, on drugs, needles as big as the pen, the whole deal, right? But is functioning, struggles, good, but different than what I've seen happen to OJ. And OJ walked into my studio in 1994 and 1995. He's a team captain for the Stallions here in the Canadian Football League. I got to know him at that point, comes back after playing in Miami and St. Louis in the NFL to play in Baltimore, win a championship, and was hosting television here. You know what I mean? I have seen, Brian Billick and Solly, I know of your mutual love and respect for Brian. Brian tells the story of OJ coming into his office and making an announcement to Brian, and Brian thought he was leaving to maybe join a ministry or do something like that, and was announcing that he said he had an opportunity. And the way OJ put it to Brian when OJ was still well enough to put it in words, but I have seen OJ through all of this deterioration over two decades. I still talk to OJ whenever I'm in a room with OJ. We communicate via his communication device, and the voice that comes out of it's an It breaks me up to talk about it and watching that, but I've seen that. Tell me if OJ's diagnosed now, or God forbid a football player's diagnosed, what happens to them in 2022 with the diagnosis, as opposed to, I guess OJ was diagnosed probably in 2004, 5, 6, in that range.
Yeah, sadly, there's not a lot of difference between diagnosis today and when OJ was diagnosed. So there was one drug that was approved.
That's disappointing. I got to tell you that.
Yeah, but we're on a renaissance of ALS. We're in the middle of a potential renaissance in ALS care. So let's just go back to your first question. What does somebody do now? So there's one generic drug and one branded drug that was approved by the agency. In the mid-90s, the generic drug, and about a decade ago in the case of the branded drug, the challenge is that neither one of them really change functional benefits. There's no functional benefits. And since one loses function in ALS, this is the critical part. You mentioned your sister with ALS. I mean, rather MS. MS. Yeah. MS. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing here at Clean is we're focusing on a disease-modifying treatment. So our work began really with an understanding that ALS and other neurodegenerative diseases, and I would incidentally place MS into the same category, both MS and ALS are neurodegenerative diseases. They have a common underlying mechanism, and that is a decline in the brain cell's ability to really produce and to utilize energy. And though this happens in all of us, a natural part of aging is a decline in this brain ability to use energy.
Not for me.
Yeah, not for you.
Not yet.
You're so energetic. Yeah, not yet. Hopefully not for me either, but I'm in my 56th year now. I turned 56 in a few weeks. And my mother, who's 79, I can tell you she is slower than me. So I'm expecting to slow down at some point. But in neurodegenerative diseases like ALS and MS, this is amplified, it's exacerbated by the disease. And the energy deficit leads to a dysfunction and the death of brain cells. And so what Clene's goal is to see if we can address this directly. We have an opportunity to do better than just treat symptoms. We'd like to potentially modify the course of the disease. This is our focus.
Solomon Wilcox is here, joined by his pal, CEO Rob Etherington of Clene Nanomedicine, talking about all things ALS. Sully, you always got a cause, bro. This one obviously comes near and dear because I know you know OJ too, and probably know other victims of this incredible disease.
Absolutely. And it's an opportunity to really try to do some good, to try to bring about, when we talked about the innovative treatments, but to really be able to change the lives for many of the people who have been diagnosed with ALS. And as Rob said, some 5,000 new cases annually in the United States. If we could prevent that and lower it even marginally, that's drastically improving the lives of so many people. And I'd like for there to one day be that no matter who's diagnosed, that we have some treatments that can keep the disease from increasing and from ravaging the lives of so many talented people.
All right. Well, Clene is spelled C-L-E-N-E if you're looking him up. And we're going to get back and tell folks how they can get involved. Sally, I want to talk a little football with you while I have ear on the draft. And first things first, extol the virtues of the value and the power of drafting a safety in the first round. Let's start with that, right?
Well, you listen, I think if you're a Baltimore Raven fan, I think you know the answer to that question probably more than most NFL fans, because you've had a player who epitomizes what that position's all about and how it could yield championship results if you get it right. And Ed Reed, he's on the Mount Rushmore of NFL safeties, right? Let's face it. And if Kyle Hamilton can just be in the same neighborhood as an Ed Reed and have that kind of impact on the franchise, and I do think that's the potential here. I do know that's a lofty goal, but it's certainly within the ballpark because he's that much of a talented player, has a tremendously high football IQ. I know he didn't have the best 40 time, right? He didn't perform well in the underwear Olympics that we call the scouting combine. But if you put the tape on, Kyle Hamilton checks all the boxes, just like an Ed Reed. He finds the football. He's an aggressive hitter, aggressive tackler. He takes the right angles when it comes to making plays in the passing game. I think he can play inside the box and perform at the deep third level of the defense to help defend against the pass. So I think he's going to be a transformational player within the Baltimore Ravens franchise.
Now, you mentioned three players in the top 50. Some would say three in the top 30. If you're talking about Ajabo before the injury, and certainly in Lindenbaum, there's this stigma against safeties and centers and even running backs to some degree, and even linebackers on some boards as to where their value is, that it's not a great value to use a first round pick. Tell you what, we fell apart around here after Matt Burke at the center position. And after Ed Reed, we're still looking to replace him, still looking to replace Ray Lewis, still looking to replace John Ogden, for crying out loud. Because when you lose those guys, you feel it. You feel it for a long time. And using first round picks to take centers and safeties, that's not in line with what everybody else does. But around here, they got the two best players at those positions, and they feel like these are second contract guys. They feel like these are going to be guys, the next championship team around here. They're going to be pivotal starting players on that team.
Hey, you know what? You don't miss them until they're gone, right? When you have those kind of players and they have a 10-year run within your franchise and they help you to win Super Bowls, you tend to take them for granted a little bit. Let's face it. And then when they're gone, now you start looking around for them. And even as you go shopping in free agency, you go shopping in other draft classes, you still can't find them. And so I get it. I understand the data analytics that say you don't take a safety within the top 10, or maybe you don't take a center within the top 16 picks in the first round. But if he's the guy that you know is going to be a 10-year player for your organization, if Tyler Linderbaum, he's a unicorn. He's a rare specimen at the center position that can help set protections, that can help fuel your rushing attack, that can protect your quarterback. And oh, by the way, he's a leader in the clubhouse. Those kind of players are what we call force multipliers. And I think that's what you have in both players, in Tyler Linderbaum and Kyle Hamilton. And so I don't care where you take them. Just make sure you get it right when you do take them. And with both of these guys, I believe the Baltimore Ravens have gotten it right.
Solomon Wilcott's here, longtime insider. He's out in Cincinnati where they almost won a Super Bowl. Came awful close. I don't want to rub it in too much. Rob Etherington's here from Clean as well. The aftermath of that, though, is that the last 3 months, every time I open the microphone and start talking football, before the draft, during the draft, after the draft, it's, oh, well, yeah, Ravens are nice and they nice draft and all that, but everybody's chasing Cincinnati at this point because of Burrow. The contract situation since the last time we got together with your friends in Northern Ohio, giving ridiculous sums of money to Deshaun Watson, it's really changed the paradigm for what the Ravens and Lamar Jackson are going to be in the end, especially when you look at what Hollywood Brown, what happened there, that they quietly kept it under wraps. It's not always quiet, but they wind up trading out a guy that they really believed in a couple of years ago. And much like Coach Tomlin says in Pittsburgh, we want volunteers here, not hostages. So if you don't like being here, right, back in your era, Parcells would say, sit down and play wide receiver, or I'll put your ass on the bench. Now it's like, no problem. We'll deal you off. And it is a different era for that, and how the Ravens orchestrated this Hollywood Brown exit.
And you're right. There was a time in our league that if the player was disgruntled, if he didn't get the contract he wanted or wasn't getting a number of balls thrown his way, he had to just sit there and take it. And he was made to acquiesce to team demands and fit within the culture and the framework of the environment of that football team. And now players can do a hold in. They could, you know, tacitly resist what the team's mantra is really all about. And I do believe the Baltimore Ravens did the right thing. Look, if you don't want to be here, let's find the players who do want to be here, because the Baltimore Ravens have gone all in on Lamar Jackson. You and I both know that. They decided that they're going to play a certain brand of football. I think they've always done that since they've been there in Baltimore, whether it's, hey, we're going to be a defensive-led organization, or we're going to be a team that leans into the running game and allow that to help us win championships. They have the right environment. And at the highest level of participation with team owner, general manager, everyone's all in. With that said, the Baltimore Ravens have never had a Pro Bowl receiver. Not once. And Marquise Hollywood Brown knows that. He knows that going to Pro Bowls now allows him to ask for more money, because where there's high levels of productivity, there's going to be a high level of return on investment. He expects to be paid like today's NFL wide receivers. And so I don't think those two things meshed in terms of what he wants and then playing for the Ravens organization, which is primarily a rushing offense. And I think both sides agreed and they were able to move on. I think that's the best thing that we could say about it.
Well, I'm going to push back on all in on Lamar. They're all in on Lamar for now, but you're not all in on Lamar until the ring comes, right? And that's good. You know, no agent. It's, we talked about this at the Super Bowl, how unorthodox all of this is from his perspective and from Eric's perspective. Not really, I got to sit down with the kid and talk about money. I don't, that's very uncomfortable, I think, in a lot of ways. But more than that, since this Cleveland signing and what it means, not just for Lamar, what it means for Mr. Brown down there with Joe Burrow in your town and anywhere else where you're going to have to ink a quarterback and saying, well, the old money was 80 to 100 million. The new money's now 250 million or 12% of the value of the franchise or something like that, that it's going to get to Bisciotti to say, whoa, I'm not giving you 250 million because they gave you 230. I don't know where this is going to go, but it doesn't. I'm not convinced Lamar's here 3 years from now. I'm convinced he's here long enough to get franchised. And to your point, if he's that disgruntled, they could find another place. But I don't know where the sweet spot for the money is going to be. This franchise always figures it out. But I think until it's done, given the stakes and the amount of money, it's not done until it's done for me.
See, I think the team is all in on him. I've heard it from Steve Bisciotti himself.
I think they're all in, but until the check's written, they're not all in. Yeah, no, really not.
But no, they're all in, and now they're trying to figure out what's the price point. It's the same as the Dallas Cowboys, Nestor. They were all in on Dak Prescott, but the market keeps moving. By the time they become comfortable with one number, that number's changed. You and I both know the market moves very rapidly, particularly at the quarterback position, much in the same way the market has moved rapidly with the wide receivers in this offseason. That's why the Titans found themselves. They love A.J. Brown, but they couldn't come to some kind of agreement on what that number looks like because that number keeps moving. They weren't comfortable. And I think the same kind of set in with the Baltimore Ravens and Marquise Hollywood Brown, who's not, let's be honest, not at the same level as an A.J. Brown or Tyreek Hill or Davante Adams. So I think it was quite easier to make that decision. But this quarterback, Lamar Jackson, you and I both know, he's must-see TV. The guy is a tremendous competitor. He wins for this organization. He saved the coach's job, got him a new contract when they made him the starter. He lifted the entire organization. You and I both know primetime TV comes a run into Baltimore when Lamar Jackson is under center.
Thank you, Agent Solly. Now, how much do you want? Now, what do we go? What's the deal? We're all in agreement on all that. I just don't know where the number is and whether the Ravens are going to say $200 million in guaranteed money is a nice number for them.
Even if I gave you a number, it doesn't mean anything because it's not about what Solomon Wilcox has. It's about what Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens can agree upon. I don't find it a problem that he's negotiating for himself, okay? Because I could rest assured that just like any young man, just like you or I or Rob, before we go in and negotiate, we're going to consult with someone who can give us background information, who can give us the numbers and give us the parameters for how we ought to be operating and how we ought to be negotiating. He's not going into a conversation with the Baltimore Ravens totally blind. He's not Googling what kind of number he needs. I'm sure he's smart enough to be able to at least have some consultant that he can speak with and then go in and say, here's what the parameters are. Here's what the negotiations. Now, I do think that pathway might take them longer to come to an agreement than if he sent an agent in to negotiate on his behalf. But I don't think that it would render him to be less accurate in the number that he should be asking for.
If he were your son, would you let him negotiate his own deal?
I think with the right, if put it like this, me, my son, and my family, we would consult with the right people before we go in and speak for ourselves. I was negotiating for myself at 24, 25 years old, not in the NFL, but in other things that I did in life. And I'm sure you did too. But we always did it by consulting with someone that was operating at a higher level and had more knowledge, right? That could give us knowledge on background that allowed us to operate from a position of strength. And so, yeah, I would feel definitely comfortable with him doing that. It may be a little bit unorthodox, and we might ask ourselves, that's what happened with the Houston Texans when DeAndre Hopkins, he was negotiating for himself. They seem to have had a problem with it. And all they got in return was a fourth round pick, and he went on to Arizona and produced at a very high level. Listen, the numbers are already there. All you got to do is just take the average of what a player is already making, the top five at that position. This is not that complicated. This isn't some high level formula for trying to figure out where is the medium in terms of the top player at your position. So I don't think it's that complicated at all.
I think the Browns made it more complicated with the amount of money they gave Watson, though. The unprecedented nature of that
contract. The market moved. That's all that happened. When markets move, you either respond and you remain competitive or you die or you fail. You fall back. Okay. Now, listen, you and I both know you can say what you want about the Cleveland Browns because they're in the AFC North and they are a challenger to the Bengals and to the Steelers and to the Ravens, but they just got better. It just got real. He's that good of a player. The last time he played, he was one of the top quarterbacks in our league. He led the league in passing. He also led the league in yards per pass attempt. He's only 26 years old and getting better. And so now you got to figure out how do you keep pace with the Cleveland Browns, particularly at the quarterback position. You have your guy, Now you got to figure out a way to keep your guy. The Bengals are going to be forced with the same decision with Joe Burrow here in a couple of years. And I guarantee you, they're not going to flinch. They're going to, you know what they're going to do? They're going to grin and bear it. They're going to bite down and write the check.
That's Mr. Brown's going to write a guaranteed check. Oh man, I want to be witness to that.
No one. I didn't say it was going to be guaranteed. I just said they're going to write it. Listen, it's nuance, right? At the end of the day, you got to pay the guy. No one said you had to guarantee it, but you got to pay the guy if you want to keep him.
Solomon Wilcox is here speaking from Cincinnati, Ohio, where they almost won a Super Bowl, and we'll still compete with them. First time I could say that in a long time. Rob Etherington's also here from Clean talking about ALS. Rob, I'm going to send you both on your way. I just wanted you to wrap things up here from the football angle and the ALS angle for what you guys do at Clean and how our audience could be involved. And God forbid anybody in the world of our people were stricken with this horrible disease, but where is the involvement from the public for what you do?
So let me just also add a Baltimore angle. So Clean's a Baltimore-based company. Our R&D and manufacturing center is about an hour north of that great background of the harbor behind you. We're up in Cecil County. In fact,
they have crab cakes in Cecil County. I can confirm that. That's true.
A number of great crab cakes there. In fact, we should go out to eat a crab cake when you come up by our plant. Our lead drug is called CNM-AU8. What it's doing is it's a nanotherapeutic, which means super small. So that means that the patient drinks it, it's absorbed, it goes to the brain. And then what it's doing is driving cellular energy producing reactions that help the brain cells work better and protect function. And by function, I mean the way you move and walk and talk and eat and chew and breathe. And so football players need that. They need to move and walk and talk and eat and chew and breathe. You and I need to move and walk and talk and eat and chew and breathe. And the challenge about ALS is that's exactly what we lose when we have ALS. We lose our ability to move and walk and talk and eat and chew and breathe. So I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but it is a tragic, devastating condition. And our lead drug is currently in mid to late stage clinical trials. Depending upon the results, possibly within a year, we could be filing for approval for its use. And we certainly hope with all this other companies that are also working on ALS that we can work together to cure or to provide good drugs for this devastating condition. And we very much appreciate, Nestor, your focus on it, because for the NFL players out there that have ALS and every single patient in America, we need better research, we need effective research, we need new drugs, and Clean is trying to lead the charge. And people can find out about this more if they'd like to pop to our website. It's very simple, www.clean.com, Clean, CLENE.com.
Clean, CLENE, based here in Maryland, as they would say, where they have crab cakes. Solly's going to get me some chili and whatever they do in Cincinnati, barbecue and whatnot. We'll get together. Hey, schedule comes out next week. We'll get to yell at each other about defending the honor of the AFC North and all that. I love having you on, Solly. It's always good to visit with you, man.
Always great to be on with you, Nestor. Keep up the great work, my friend.
That's why people hate Zoom and they hate all the video cuts. I can see Solly smile from here. In the old days, he was just calling in from a phone booth someplace. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour is getting back out on the road. We're going to be on Friday the 6th. We're going to be at Conrad's Crabs in Perry Hall having great conversations. Giving away Betty Boop scratch-off tickets. Solid might be lucky, too. Pink and blue, pick your pick. And also brought to you by our friends at Goodwill Industries. And I got a bag and a closet full of stuff I'm giving away next week. And our friends at Window Nation putting new windows in. I'm going to be talking about replacement windows here in this spring and summer as spring has sprung. We'll have an NFL schedule next week. We'll get to yell about all that and have a little fun here in the AFC North. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore positive.